Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Shahaya Farsijani. She is author of The Burden of My Red Lips in Tehran. Shahaya is a former reporter and anchor turned author and poet. She has traveled extensively throughout the world and has finally returned to her hometown of New York City. After publishing her collection of sensual poetry, she decided to share her story as a young woman during some of the most heated years in Iran's modern history. For more information, you can visit her website, which is redlipsintehran.com, and I have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Shahaya to the show. Hello, I'm sorry. What's the proper pronunciation of your first name? I'm hoping I'm doing that.
Let's start from the beginning. It's Shaqayiq.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Shaqayiq. Okay, great.
Yeah, you kind of need to go to university to be trained on how to say my name.
and your last name, is that Farsijani, or is that?
Yeah, that's the easy one. It's Farsi, the language that Iranians speak, and then Johnny, okay. Just like Johnny Rockets. Yeah.
I was hoping that was the case. So, thank you for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. Well, you have such a unique story, and I would really love to explore so many different areas. Your personal story, also some of the elements of being a teen and a woman in the various cultures. But let's go ahead and first start with going back to the time, basically you were born and you spent your early years in Brooklyn, New York, and then your family was uprooted and you went to Iran. So if you wouldn't mind, can you take us back to the time when that happened? What happened and what were your feelings at that time?
Well, at the time, I was very neutral. I had heard some horror stories about some girls that had gone back during their teenage years, but I was so lively and so, carefree soul. I basically kicked it and said, I'll just go with the flow and see what happens. And, I mean, what could be so bad about this? But then I went with a very Brooklyn-type lens on my eyes, or you could say westernized, and then I was, struck by all the little details that Iran really had to offer. Not, for tourists it may be different, but for someone that's going to live there, plus someone that's a teenager, plus someone that is very rebellious and Madonna-ish, plus someone that has grown up in New York City, of all places. It was a big, kind of like a Muhammad Ali punch in the face for me. But then again, that being said, I had the time of once I got to know how the underground New York City of Tehran operated, I had the time of my life there. And if I were to actually go back to one era of my life, it would be either Tehran teenager years or Brooklyn elementary years. These two were my favorite, especially Tehran. But before you understand this New York City, you go through a lot of hoops. And those hoops could really, if you don't have the right support system, and my parents were a great support system, full of love and emotional support and mental support. But if you don't have that support system, it's really hard to stay afloat. And, a lot of girls didn't have that. And you know, this book is a semi-memoir. A lot of the stuff that I didn't go through and those girls did go through, I incorporated within the character because, you know, the main objective of the book was to create awareness of how people really live. What do the teenagers really go through, specifically teenagers that are female? Because it's a little bit different, you know, from male and female, how they operate. I mean, the term equality really differs when it comes to gender in Iran. And so, yeah, it was a real interesting roller coaster, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I just can't imagine. First of all, I mean, it must have been, you know, just a real culture shock, and you know, and you know, the one thing, you know, they often say that kids can be resilient, but you know, when you've kind of gotten some of the, you know, your basic beliefs, you know, kind of instilled, because, you know, they happen very young. So when you kind of have that instilled, and then you go into such a very different kind of culture, I mean, that kind of really, I would think, would create a lot of soul searching in a way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I was hit by a big, big identity crisis. Well, I was going through an identity. I mean, which teen doesn't? And also this culture, this new culture that was being introduced to me on so many different levels, on a religious angle, then on a society, and then in school, because I was still a teenager. I was in high school. So and then, you know, of course, I was into guys and checking out guys and how I could go out on a date with a guy. And in that country, there's, you know, a layer of, you know, how it's a very rich culture, so it's very rich in its own culture, but it has this really heavy, oily layer of religion, and that's the part that I really went into conflict with because I wasn't ready to accept it. I mean, I was going through getting to know myself, so let alone trying to I wanted to choose my own religion, not have it shoved down my throat. So that was the part that I really had a difficulty with, but the rest was, you know, easy breezy. You could kind of you know, understand, and in light of that acceptance, understand, and then just move forward with it. But it was just that part that I had a really big hard time. But you know, it was really cool. It was really interesting on, excuse me, how people date in Iran. You know, it's not like going to a bar and this guy coming up to you and say, "Hey, how you doing? Let me buy you a drink." No, it doesn't go like it was. You know, like I said in the book, it's like a boulevard, and you go up and down this boulevard. And if a guy likes a girl, he'll find, like, if you're in that, I don't know, like Toyota Camry or whatever car, you're in that Mercedes, he'll follow you. And then if the girl likes the guy, she'll roll down her window and then let the guy, you know, flirtatiously speak with her and then throw his number in the window. And if she doesn't, she'll just keep the window up and keep on cruising. So, it's like, and then I remember at the beginning, I was so, you know, into American culture. I remember this guy coming up to my window, and I was like 18. I just got my driver's license in Tehran, which is kind of a big accomplishment because people there drive crazy. And I remember this guy coming up to me, and I couldn't even understand what he was saying because my Farsi wasn't really up on par, you know, up to speed. And I had TLC, one of their songs that said, "I don't want your number, I don't want to give you mine." And I just pumped up the volume, and the girl's like, my friend sitting next to me said, "He's not even talking to you about number." I said, "Oh, well, that being said, I just want to make it clear that I'm not getting your number."
That is funny.
It was fun.
Wow.
It was real fun.
That is so different. I mean, well, you know, one of the things I'd like to talk about is, and start with next, is that, you know, there is bound to be, you know, some commonality and then some differences. So what I'd like to talk about is the common elements and differences, both first, we'll start with teen, you know, from a teen perspective and teen experience, and then from as a woman, you know, because I'd like to talk about both of those. So let's go ahead and start with, I'd like to start in the positive, commonality. What are some of the common elements between, you know, American teens and Iranian teens?
I think the common element is the basic nature of being a teenager and wanting to explore and being adventurous. And you know, just like any teen, they're trying to figure out who they are and what they want to do. So they go drinking and they go girl hunting or boy hunting, or, you know, they're into this fashion and wearing this and doing all these weird things. So that's what I think the common element is. You know, teenagers are just plain old teenagers. There's really no difference. I do think that, you know, there's a lot more differences that are put than similarities. I think the similarity is really trying to get out of your skin and understand who you are at that age, and trying to just experiment in as many different fields as you can to get to enjoy life and get to know yourself better.
Okay. All right. And then now the differences, I mean, obviously, you know, dating, you mentioned, you know, that, I mean, that's a whole different you know, set of circumstances. But, I mean, what about, you know, I mean, you mentioned, you know, drinking and the fashion. And I mean, you know, how are those different from the U.S.? I mean, I just don't know, you know, like drinking age, whether that's, I mean, particularly in the...
There's no drinking age, because alcohol is banned, period.
Okay.
You could be 50 and you're not allowed to drink, and you could be 12. Well, 12,
okay.
You know, that's a little bit going under.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I don't know.
You know,
yeah.
In your bottle with milk. No. you're just not. It's the, you know, it's the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's an Islamic country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so no drinking now. But you mentioned. So is this like a subversive activity in a way? I mean, if there were to be drinking going on,
You could drink, but you could have soft drinks. I mean, there's no spirits or wines. You know, that's as far as drinking. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of other differences. You know, for example, let me just give you a very one that really came into my perspective, is that I was I loved dance. I wanted to go into dance. And then when I was trying to choose a major in university, there is no arts, there is no dance, there is no fashion. There's interior design and stuff like that. But, you know, there is nothing of what I wanted. I wanted to dance. I wanted to compete in competitions and maybe ballroom dancing, and not just, you know, jazz, solo jazz or contemporary ballet. So that's one obstacle I hit, and I was really, really disappointed that there was no curriculum that really supported the arts and arts in a way that I wanted, which was dance and movement of the body and expressing myself through my body. But it's... And my cousin, she wanted to be a fashion designer. And I remember that she, because there is nothing like that, she was forced to go to engineering, which was the least favorite. But it was something that would get her out of the house, because you don't want to be stuck in the house. Because then the next path when you're stuck in the house is that you have to, like, surrender to some guy wanting to marry you. And she didn't want to do that. She wanted to explore and outside of the house. And one of the best ways to do that is, you know, quote unquote, under the umbrella of education. Now, that being said, I'm not saying that all the girls want to get out of the house with the excuse of an education, but they definitely want to explore both fields. And in the house, it's very difficult because Iranian parents are also very strict, and it's very hard to find one liberal-minded. And, you know, it's like that in many countries, so that's not a big deal. But the big deal is that she wanted to study fashion, and there was no open highway for her to progress. So she had this full note, and I have this in the book too. She had this full notebook of all these really, really unique, exotic designs that I'm sure would be on par with any, like, fashion week in, you know, catwalk. And she couldn't really do anything with it. It's as far as, like, designing them and putting them in the closet. She couldn't offer them. And, but, you know, I remember that she actually hooked up with some of her other girlfriends, and they started this little society, this little community, and they were, you know, slowly but surely doing these little fashion shows in these really, like, basements of homes. And so that was really interesting for me because I would say, okay, you guys have found a way to do stuff. And, you know, it was like word of mouth advertising because you can't really put it in newspapers and print and, you know, have advertisements on TV about it. So this girl told that girl and that girl told her aunt and her aunt told her sister-in-law and it just like spread. And then, you know, suddenly you see 1,000 people showing up at an underground fashion show. So that was really, it was really neat how these girls, with all the obstacles, found a way to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that was
I mean, to me, the, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to say that, you know, that's just, you know, that's one of those things that's, you know, really inspiring is being able to have, to be able to work around that system. Now, when they got, obviously, they got popular. So when that happened, I mean, what are the consequences? What were the chances? What would happen to them if kind of they were found out, you know, or that, you know, yeah.
Well, the thing is that it's not something that, I mean, it's not a sin. You know,
okay.
It's just, you know, all of them were females. It's not like
right.
they have drinking afterwards or they're going
okay.
to after party. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
they're just doing this fashion show, which, you know,
mm-hmm.
they just want to be, you know, out there
yeah.
in their own little, I guess, female kind of environment. And, you know, if the authorities, and I have this also in the book, like if the authorities wake up on the wrong side of the gutter one day and they want to really
mm-hmm.
give them a hard time, you know, paying them off is the best way to do it. You just, you know, pay them off and they go their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
or they change their location. You know, they're so clever and they're so smart that they have the smarts to do what it takes to keep this trend alive.
Yeah.
You know, they just
yeah.
move it to another house or, they changed something in it, and before the authorities would find out, they're off to a different destination.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, because, I mean, the idea, you know, I mean, first of all, I've not lived or even experienced, you know, such a repressive environment or society. So for me, it would be, I mean, I've just tried to imagine how the human spirit, you know, can work the system or express itself, you know, and not be broken, you know, through such an environment.
They've gone through so much difficulty that to break them, you would basically need something like 5 layers of brass knuckles.
Okay.
It's really difficult to break these guys. And, you know, right now, even the situation in Iran is that, look at the economic situation. It's just horrible with what these people are going through. And
mm-hmm.
they're still survivors. And that's really admirable because they just survive. It's been
yeah.
difficulty after difficulty for these guys. And I was just a explorer that came to Tehran. I mean, the book explores a year and a couple of months. I was there for 7 years. And as, you know, I find myself an American and an Iranian, you know, half American,
mm-hmm.
half Iranian blood, even though I'm full Iranian, but because I was raised here, I was someone that got to taste it and see it. And via that, I became a survivor. You know, I became a survivor in my
mm-hmm.
own way of how I adapted from my Western ways and adapted to their Eastern ways.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that's, you know, I think that whole survival technique and the adjustment, I mean, that's, you know, for people out there who are struggling, you know, with whatever kind of, you know, whatever kind of struggle that they're going through, you know, it's really important to keep in mind that there are ways of adjusting and kind of coming out and not only survive, but thrive as a result.
Yeah. And you know what, on top of it, these guys are really happy. Whenever, I mean, I was just, whenever I speak with them or whenever we meet up in different countries, because I rarely go back to Tehran, I find that they are the most high-spirited, enthusiastic,
mm-hmm.
fun people to hang around with. And I forget that I am of that, but because, you know, there's, you know, I live in a more westernized world right now, and
mm-hmm.
I feel the pressures of the society in a different way, not
mm-hmm.
in the way that I felt there. I feel that, oh my God, these guys have more than me on their plate, you know, more ropes around their neck. And look at them. They're laughing from the bottom of their hearts.
Yeah.
Bottom, like literally from the molecular bottom.
Wow. Yeah, that really kind of brings home the idea that happiness is a state of mind versus, you know, the personal experience.
Exactly. It is a state of mind. And I really, really, really enjoy, like I said, I really enjoyed my time there. And if I were to have that experience of my experiences in life, that would be the one that I would really go back to.
Yeah, well, that's great. That says a lot if you know, you have such a positive memory of that. Now, with regard to, you know, commonality and differences, you know, for women, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of mentioned some, you know, some of them. You know, I'm sure that whole fashion show aspect, and you know, that aspect obviously applies to women. But I mean, what were some of the you know, the biggest, I mean, let's say common elements that you find that the Iranian and American women may experience, and maybe just some of the biggest differences and maybe the challenges. Well, you know, I there are probably challenges in both, but how about just the commonality and differences from a woman's experience?
I get commonality for American and Iranian women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. Well, having myself as, you know, finding the similar ground as an American and an Iranian, I find that.
Well, let's how about the example of, you know, let's say women as like second class citizens, so to speak. You know, I mean that the value of the woman, you know, I mean, we have the glass ceiling and obviously wage discrepancy and a lot of that kind of thing here, but you know, in Iran, you know, you mentioned that for women it's either, you know, take the education route as a way out, or be married off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are those like the only two kind of alternatives for women there? Or to me, it seems like there's, you know, not a whole lot of choice there.
Right. Well, you know, the choices are definitely limited, and the opportunities for female growth are definitely
mm-hmm.
limited. I mean, we have Hillary here. I look at her position right now. She might run for presidency. We have so many powerful females that are CEOs of companies. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have Sheryl Sandberg. We have, you know, they're not, we have many, but these two are coming to mind right now. We have
female athletes
that, you know, we have Serena Williams, that's, you know, one of the greatest tennis players of all time. But in Tehran, you know, first of all, look at, you know, there's a lot of athletic females, but it's all, like I said, there's an Islamic layer to the society. So
mm-hmm.
they are accepted as great athletes, but it's a little bit more difficult to maneuver when it comes to, you know, playing world. Like, for example, we have many good female tennis players in Iran. Which one of them have you seen in Wimbledon?
Right.
You know what I mean?
I haven't.
You know,
right.
It's a little bit more difficult to crack that surface. You know, I for example, played in the tennis club in Iran, and I played with some of the best. But I'm sure that they could definitely, you know, be seeded tennis players. But which one of them have you seen in, like, in the Australian Open or in Wimbledon? So that kind of, that really bothers me. I mean, they could even play religiously. They could play with pants, even though that would really, you know, even when they swim, they swim with a certain kind of outfit, which I also have in the book. You know, they swim with full covered bikinis. It's not a bikini. It's like a full covered piece of garment, really.
Right.
So that's one. And then, you know, Iran has so, like I said, so much smarts and brains in these girls, and it's very difficult to really cut through that society and say, hey, I'm an entrepreneur. I had a friend. She was a PhD of physics. She'd established her own company, but there was some difficulty initiating all the beginning steps of incorporating the company that she was trying to start. And so she hit so many obstacles that she eventually, got a scholarship to a university here and came here. So and I'm not saying that equality here has a different meaning from equality there. The definitions really differ. I mean, from our point of view, we say, equality there means females are secondhand citizen. But from their point of view, equality does not mean that females, it just means that females fit into society differently. And, we have females that are doing many things right now. So it doesn't mean, in our point, for me, it does mean that females, you need to give more to females. I wouldn't call myself a feminist, but I am on the side of female rights just as much as I'm on the side of male rights. I believe in complete equality. And, over there, equality has a different meaning. And that really bothers me.
Yeah, so now you talked about athletes, for example. So is it the the Iranian political and religious structure that kind of makes it difficult for them to be on the world stage?
I believe that they would have an effect. I'm sure that all that is going on from a political angle does have an effect in the social angle of the society.
Okay.
And of course we see it in, I always want to see success in all faces, from all countries. But what hurts me is that there's so much talent and success hidden in this country, and it's kind of hard to crack the surface and bring them on top.
Yeah.
Just because I've seen it, and it's not like I sit here and I hear about it, but I've really seen it. I've seen some of the best, and it's just really difficult, especially for these girls.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, to me it's, I don't know. I just feel so strongly about the value of each person, and what they can bring, it just seems that any kind of oppression to me is just, whether it be here or there, is just, it's just sad because I feel that if we were all able to express our potential, that this would be such a better, much better world for us.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, listen, we're about halfway through the show. I want to take just a quick break here for about 90 seconds because I do want to invite people who are listening. If you'd like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you'd like for me to ask, feel free to type them in there. And then when we come back after the break, I'd like to talk about, the idea of a first love, the idea of in a repressive society.
My favorite subject.
Good. Well, I figured with those the poems that you wrote that might be one of your favorite subjects.
But that's about love,
okay.
Too. It's all love.
Yeah, it's all love. And then I'm talking a little bit maybe more about the parents and that kind of thing. So, okay. And anyway, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, today my very special guest is Shagayik Farsajani, and she is author of The Burden of My Red Lips in Tehran. And again, you can find out more about her and her book by visiting the website, redlipsintehran.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. And from there, you can purchase her book on Amazon, both in Kindle and paperback. So definitely go and pick it up. Like I said, I appreciate you supporting our guests. Okay, with that, we're back.
Yay.
Wild
Poppy Love Flower.
Wild Poppy Love Flower, okay. All righty. I'm going to write that one down. So, but listen, this has really been this is really great because, you know, I there's so much, I think, that, you know, we hear in the media, and I often wonder exactly how much of it is true, how much of it is, you know, just being, you know, kind of propaganda, you know, being spoon-fed to us, and then, you know, the real story. I mean, it seems like there's always a real story in between what we hear and you know, what the experience is. So I'm really happy to be able to get firsthand some information from you. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk first love in a repressive society. So did you have that first love when you were there?
I did. I had my first boyfriend in Tehran, and he was the... he basically simplified a lot of what I didn't understand in my world, which was a very American type of world. And he simplified it, and he made sense of it for me.
So now you rolled your window down for him, right?
No, we had a different situation. So we got caught by the religious authorities. So I was scared because my father didn't know. I had taken the car, number one. And number two, these religious guys, if they catch you talking with a guy, and the guy's not your husband or your cousin, you're basically in prison or, you know, taken down to be questioned. So I didn't know what to do. And my friend, which, you know, is Elhaman, we met very randomly in school, and her story was a completely different story too, which was a very interesting one. But she said, listen to this guy, because this guy looks like knows his way around. So anyway, and the guy was interested in, you know, two cute girls, so
mm-hmm.
we just trusted him, and we were like, can you take us out of this maze? So he went through this street and that street, and he knew all the little mazes. And finally, when we had found, you know, some safety, he came up to my window, and, you know, this is, of course, all in the book, and that was the start of our relationship. And I couldn't even talk Farsi properly, so Ilham was kind of like my quote-unquote tongue. So she was, like, whipping mm-hmm. out all these, like, Farsi phrases and metaphoric, you know, phrases. And the guy probably thought that I was shy or something. He didn't know that I had no idea what was going on, and I didn't understand the language. So... he said, you know, we would love to, you know, call me and stuff. And then Ilham's like, let's get out of here before, you know, the authorities come and find he's talking to us and we're really busted. And then, yeah,
wow.
So he gave me his number. That's the way he gave me his number, or else I had no knowledge of speaking. I would probably speak English back to him.
Wow. Well, that's really something. Now, so, obviously, that... How long did that go on? I mean, was that one of the typical first love kinds of things?
That went on. Well, I'm not going to spoil the end of the story for you, but that basically goes on until the end of the story.
Okay.
And he's a very main character in my life.
Okay, great. Yeah, we definitely want people to read the book and get all the details.
Yeah, we don't want to give him away and me away.
Okay. All right. That's great. Now, you know, you mentioned, you know, that in Iran, parents tended to be strict. So what is the how would you describe, you know, family life, you know, in Iran? And, you know, just, I mean, because, you know, here in the U.S., I mean, there are, you know, it really kind of depends on the family. Some have, you know, really strong family, you know, extended family kinds of connections. Some are very nuclear. How about Iran? What's the situation like there?
The families are very, very close. Here, sometimes the families are very, very distant, or but you can't get closer than Persian families than in Iran. They're very close. They're very tight. They're very there for each other. They're very supportive of one another, even if they have conflicts within themselves or disagreements. They're very close and tight to one another. And it was in Iran that I really explored the meaning of what it means to have a cousin. And I'm very appreciative of what I've learned and the values that I learned in my time there. One of them was the meaning of family and how to stick with each other and, you know, so forth.
Uh-huh. And so now the, you know, when it comes to the, you know, one of the things that, you know, often here we have, through thick and thin, you know, that kind of thing when it comes to family. You talked about, you know, being really close. Is it a very geographic? I mean, quite often do you find families, extended families, all within a same kind of geographic area, or I guess maybe that's a generalization. I'm not sure if
they're all,
you know,
over. No, they're all over. You have families. Some extended. They live in London. Some there because everybody, you know, is spread out. But they're all close still. Doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. Now, yeah, I'd like to kind of, I did indicate in the introduction that, you know, that you're a former reporter and anchor. So I kind of,
right.
Let's kind of shift to that hat, put that hat on. From that perspective, what is your feelings or opinions on kind of what's going on in the news now? This, you know, the easing or the, you know, the increased discussions between both countries, and, you know, and just some of the maybe the easing of rhetoric between the two. What's your feeling on kind of what's going on?
I don't really comment politically, but I could tell you that I'm an advocate of peace, and I'm anti-war. But as far as what's going on, you know, of course, nobody wants any disagreements. Nobody wants any bloodshed. And, you know, I'm a proponent it's not coming out of my mouth. I'm a proponent of peace. I don't want any bloodshed or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I can understand that. And now you kind of mentioned all the things that they've been through. So the economic conditions there are really challenging. I mean, you know, because obviously
people there are really, really under stress. There's, you know, if you buy a pair of pants here for $10, you buy the same pair of Nike pants there for like $100. So it's really, they have a lot of economic difficulties.
Wow. Okay, boy. Now, I wanted to kind of look at the idea of prejudice, you know, because I'm curious that as an Iranian American to know if you've, you know, kind of experienced any, I mean, you know, we get all kind of crazy folks here that are very judgmental, but I mean, have you experienced any kind of prejudice against your Iranian aspect here? And then likewise in Iran, is there, you know, again, I'm sure they probably have their radicals too, but I mean, is there a general maybe distrust, or what's the feeling toward Americans?
They don't have anything against, in fact, they're very welcoming of Americans. I was never judged or, in fact, I was very welcomed when they found out, you know, I was raised in America and I spoke fluent English. So I was very welcomed. I think what the view here is that Iranians don't like Americans. That's completely false. Iranians love all nationalities, and especially Americans. I mean, they think Americans are cool. They like it. They don't like, you know, who likes hatred, especially Iranians.
Right.
So kind. Now, on the flip side to your question, have I experienced any prejudice here being an Iranian in America? I haven't, personally. And I don't know, maybe that's because I was here since I was a child, and I'm very... I find myself very comfortable in any situation. But I know people that have experienced it. And sometimes when we talk, they share it with me. And, you know, so either it's because their name, you know, my name is basically not the easiest name on the planet. But I go by...
I know that.
Know. Right. Yeah. But I've never experienced it personally. But I know people that have. And... you can't control the other side of the equation of what people think of you. So you have to really be comfortable with who you are and just move forward.
And
I think prejudice is a state of mind, and it's something that someone builds up in their head. You just have to have your own way of thinking and just move forward.
Yeah. I agree with that. You know, that's just one of those things I was curious because, you know, I mean, quite often we will see, you know, and it's the people who get attention, you know, those who are acting out, you know, against, you know, one another. And I just, you know, my sense was, you know, that was one of those things where my sense was that the people are so much more genuine than we're led to believe. You know, so much, you know, more accepting and it's the politics and the, you know, some hype and media types of things that really try and distort, you know, what the majority of people are like.
The media. It's all the media. And, you know, the media is like one friend that people find that they listen to see what's going on. So depending on how that friend or that acquaintance tells a story, your mind automatically shifts, and it's not it's not their fault. It's what they hear.
Yeah, amazing. Now, the
being
title
said,
that you picked, yeah.
I did want to share something with you, and when you say prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
When I became a reporter in Tehran, of course, in the book, that I turned that into an internship because the book spans 1 year of this girl's life, which is kind of my life. But I remember that. And my boyfriend, Arash, I was a sport reporter, and I wanted to go to the football stadium because there was a big football game that was indicative of if Iran would go to the World Cup or not. And my director said, there's no way that we will send a girl there. He said, that was unacceptable for me. And me being the Brooklyn person that I am, I started voicing my opinion. And then my colleagues are like, girls are just not sent. Girl reporters are not sent to the stadium. And it's not because like you don't know sports. It's just because you just don't go to a stadium.
Wow.
I had to dress up like a guy. I dressed up like a guy, and I said, I'm going to do it. So, and I took my American passport with me just in case, you know, I got, you know, sort of smelled out or something. So I went there, and when Arash, my boyfriend, found out, he immediately came, and he's like, listen, you don't understand, like, girls are not allowed in the stadium. It's against the law. It's not like you go to MSG and you watch the Knicks. No, it's like you cannot watch the Knicks in the MSG in Tehran. That is it's not permitted.
Yeah.
If they find out that you're a girl, they will arrest you and you will have a fine. You may even be lashed. You may, it's like really, really harsh. So that was one thing that, you know, Arash came and saved me. But I was really on the get. I was like, well, what's the worst they could do? They'll fine me. But no, it's really against the law.
Wow. It could be in physical pain. Physical pain.
Yeah, instead of the athlete, you'll be in physical pain.
Wow, boy. That, you know, that's something. And, you know, that would be just, you know, for a girl, you know, raised in Brooklyn, you know, that would have to have been just, I don't know. I mean, it's such an eye-opener. And, yeah.
Right.
Wow, amazing. Now, you chose the title, The Burden of My Red Lips, in Tehran. So tell me, what the significance of that?
Well, originally the book was called My Red Lips, My Tehran, because I wanted it to be feminine. I wanted it to be like a girl that's, you know, moving into her sexuality. I wanted it to be soft, and I wanted it to be indicative that it's some type of Iran Tehran without sounding gloomy like all the other, you know, people make it sound like, because it's a really funny book. And so I put in My Red Lips, My Tehran, and it just wasn't doing it for me. So one day I woke up, and after I meditated, I'm like, universe, please give me a better name for this book. It's just not working for me. So I went in the elevator, and then the elevator got stuck. And then I was in the elevator with this other guy who turned out to be an ex-FBI agent. And I told him my story, and he's like, sweetheart, you should name the book The Burden of My Red Lips, The Burden of My Red Lips in Tehran. I kid you not, the moment he said that, the elevator started moving, and it opened up, and the guy walked out. And I was like, out of all the random places, this is where I get my answer, and from this person. Oh, my God. So that's how the name was born, The Burden of My Red Lips in Tehran.
Wow. It's so funny because, you know, so often, you know, that's one of the things I like to tell the listeners, you know, a lot of times when you're, you know, asking for that guidance, you know, give me the answer, that kind of thing is to look for it in very unusual ways, you know, and it has to come in through, usually, more often, it comes through the physical in ways that you wouldn't expect, but you got to kind of keep your eyes and ears open for that.
Right. When you're completely in surrender mode, it just comes to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got, about 10 minutes left. But before, I'd like to talk a little bit in, you know, I noticed in your biography on your website that you talk about having a published collection of sensual poetry. So tell us a little bit about the poet.
Yeah, so I was a reporter, and then I switched to I was a reporter, but I always wrote poetry because that's how I expressed my pain, because I was going through so many black and white spots while I was in Iran. And even, like, in Brooklyn when I was growing up, my parents were so Iranian, and I was, like, in a very, you know, American kind of world, even though my parents were so liberal in Brooklyn until we got in Iran, and then everything changed. But I always had to express my pain and my happiness, but primarily the culture shock that I was going through via my poetry. And, you know, I'm a hopeless romantic, and I wrote everything in my poems, and it's very sensual, but it's my way of expressing myself and the pain. And pain is a language, I think. I look at pain not as a down point, but as a language that I could turn and express myself and maybe help other people with. And so I started writing poetry. And I got all my collection together, and we published it about 3 years ago. It's like it's romantic and sensuous poems, but they're very deep, though. And it's kind of like, I say it's the intersection where Rumi, you know, Pablo Neruda of Chile, and, you know, Walt Whitman might meet and sit down for a coffee, and then they would write these poems, you know. And so that's my definition of it, but yeah, that's how it was. That's how the book came about.
Well, you know, those poems like that are the meat of songs. So you know, it would be wonderful to have them put to song. So.
Oh really? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So there you go. They're always looking
for another project.
There you go.
Get to work.
Well, so now, what is it that you're currently you're currently doing? Obviously, you're promoting your book, but what else do you have going on in your life there?
Well, I'm so many people have wondered what happens because the story ends abruptly. I'm actually writing the follow-up to this book, so I'm pregnant currently with my second book. And it's, we're halfway there, and I'm developing it as we move forward. And the second book is a follow-up to really what happens to this girl, to this relationship, to this family when things change, because they do take a drastic turn, and it did. It took a very drastic turn for me. And, you know, if it wasn't for, I guess, my parents, I don't know where I would have been. And so I'm writing the follow-up to that right now. You know, having fun doing that.
Great. Well, I like that the phrase, pregnant with your second book.
Yeah.
As authors, you know, we often do give birth to our books. So that's rather fitting. Now, you know, when you mentioned that your parents were kind of liberal while here and then strict when moving over there. So for them, were they both born in Iran and then came over here and then went back?
Yeah, both of my parents were born in Iran. And, you know, I think the society really affects the way that you operate. And, you know, of course, when you're in America, there's not a lot of push. And there's not a lot of push from the society. You live as you choose to live with what you choose to believe. So even though they were still my parents, but I was very, you know, I was very free here. I went on my bike rides to Coney Island, and I did what I wanted to do and saw on TV, I had my restriction. I mean, I couldn't watch Showtime or anything, but, you know, I didn't have the restrictions of the channels that were chosen for me to watch. In Tehran, they choose the channels for you to watch. So they were very liberal here. But when we went to Iran, they were the same, you know, they were awesome and loving. But I think the society pushed them to have this layer upon them, and that forced them to restrict me. And that restriction led to my even more rebelliousness that I had. And, you know, we did get into a lot of disagreements.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. But, you know, and it is interesting, the idea of how we conform or mold ourselves to our environment.
Right. And I think that's the nature of human being. Like, if I go and live in the South Pole, I'm going to conform to living in an igloo, maybe, you know, and seeing how I have to protect myself.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I'm a northerner. When I came down here, y'all wasn't part of my lexicon, but now it is. First time that came out of my mouth, I was shocked. I almost didn't know what to do. But, yeah, I could see where that would happen. Well, great. This has really been really enlightening, you know. And now, do you have any? You rarely go back to Tehran. So, do you have any plans on going back, or?
Not at this time. I don't know what will happen, but not at this time.
Okay, but you do meet with people from there in various other countries.
Yeah, I do meet with friends and, you know, some of my distant family. We, you know, we just met in Thailand for a little reunion. You know, we meet in Italy. We meet everywhere.
Well, boy, that sounds like fun. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. Getting a little taste of Iran in different countries is definitely a treat for me because I miss it. I miss it dearly.
Yeah. Well, now, kind of wrapping up, you mentioned that you have published your book. What is the name of your poetry book?
The poetry book is called Lacking Lips of Time.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's the central collection, and that's found in Amazon as well, Lacking Lips of Time.
Okay, great. I wanted to make sure that all of those poetry lovers out there knew exactly where to go to get that.
Get that fireplace going. Get that book and get a bottle of wine.
Start locking lips, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, Shaggy, this has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Likewise.
Great. Well, listen, you keep me in mind when that pregnancy
when
gets
I give birth.
When you give birth to that.
But Robert, there's another detail that I wanted to give is that because education is so close to my heart, we've allocated all the profits from this book to a chair, and that's on my website is redlipsintehran.com. And we have partnered with BuildOn, which is going to build a school in Nepal. And it's going to break ground in January of 2016. And so all the funds from this book, total funds, will be going towards this charity that I'm actually sponsoring. And so,
well, that's, you know, that is so good.
This
is also a
major thing that we're doing.
I'm glad that
you
brought that up. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And, you know, it's at the bottom of your webpage, and there's a direct link on your webpage. It goes to act.buildon.org/redlips. in Tehran. So, but anyway, people can click on that, and that is such a wonderful, philanthropic way to put the word to direct the proceeds. You know, I wish you great success with that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And okay, well, thank you for your time again, and I hope that we'll be talking sometime in the future. And I feel I am now a little bit more aware of
how to say my name.
Right. Yeah. Well, yes. But I have that Farsajani, okay? But anyway.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Shagayik Farsajani, author of The Burden of My Red Lips in Tehran. And again, you can find out more about her and the charity that the proceeds of her book go to by visiting the website, again, which is redlipsintehran.com, and that's on the show page description. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.